Good afternoon. This is on. My name is José, and this is Nightmare Before Best Practices. I work as an evangelist at Codacy. I used to organize CodeBits. There's a reason why I'm mentioning this, because one of the nightmare scenarios I'm going to talk about is regarding CodeBits. I'm a Perl programmer at heart, and I'm also a magician, in case you couldn't tell. And I'm also a card cheater. I don't cheat people for money. That's why I can say this out loud. I do gambling demonstrations. At Codacy, we have an automated code review platform. It integrates with Git. It supports a number of languages. And it's free for open source projects. So you can try it out for your projects. And today, we're going to talk about five nightmares and some of the best practices that the teams neglected to use. And this is a true story. I'm not using the names of the survivors. I don't want to shame anyone, even though in some cases it wasn't their fault, really. It was inevitable. But everything that I'm going to talk about, this really happened. Nightmare number one, the developer lost 180,000 euros. So there's this new website. It has a shopping cart. There's a payment system. It integrates with an external payment platform. And there's a successful launch. And everybody's happy for 3 weeks. 3 weeks later, one of the developers who had actually made the purchase on the website goes to check his credit card account, and he doesn't find a charge. He goes to the back office, and he doesn't find any single charge at all. So this meant, at this time, 30,000 euros per week. So 90,000 euros so far. They pick up the phone, they call the guys from the payment system and ask them what could be wrong. And they say, well, there are two ways of charging customers. They could have added, you're not using any of them. But there were two ways. Number one, you charge the customer. So there's a call to a method called charge. Number two, first you request credit approval, and then you charge the customer. You know, when you book a hotel and you see that you have credit authorized, but it's still there. You can't use it because it's authorized for that purchase, but it's still there. And then you charge the client. So that's two calls. You authorize, and then you charge. Guess what we were doing? We are authorizing. And they also added, by the way, after getting the approval, you have 1 week to charge the customer. So at this point, we've already lost 60,000 euros. We may lose 30,000 more if we don't solve the problem now. That's over 4,000 euros per day. So each day that goes by without solving the problem, that's an additional 4,000 euros. And did I mention this was a Friday afternoon? I didn't, did I? I didn't, because this wasn't a Friday afternoon. This was a Friday evening. And now there's a problem to solve fast. But I did mention 180,000 euros, and so far we're up to 90,000. And this is where the problems really started. With the words, you can use this code to fix that. Somebody else, who isn't available at the moment to explain how this works exactly, but somebody else wrote a script that fixes that particular problem. So the guy takes the script, he changes a bit here and there, he runs it over the weekend, and he decides to run it not for just this previous week, but for the 3 weeks before. So come Monday morning, he goes and checks his credit card account, and thankfully there's something there. Unfortunately, it's a refund. He goes to the back office, and there's 90,000 euros in refunds. So now you're giving away your product, and you're also giving money. It's like, this is the launch of our new system, and you can purchase things with 200% discount. And that's how that person almost lost 180,000 euros. And why did this happen? Because he was using the right methods, he was, but unfortunately on the other system side, all of them connected to the same endpoint. And that endpoint would take every single parameter it was given, and it would dump it into a file. Now, the name of the original method at this point was discarded. And this action ID right here is what was used to see what we're trying to do. And among several parameters there, the developer didn't realize that he should have changed that. So the problems here, this programmer almost lost 180,000 euros. I say almost because enter the manager extraordinaire and the lawyer, and they managed to blame the payment system. And the guys, they didn't take the blame for it, but they felt obligated to solve the problem. And somehow they managed to find the 180,000 euros back again. What caused this? No serious testing, no code reviewing on the project, no code reviewing on the script, of course, and no documentation whatsoever. How to fix this? With a technical specification, code review, technical documentation. I would also add, don't do releases on Fridays, even though that wasn't really a release, it was a bug fix, kind of. There's companies that don't do releases for weeks or months, say before Christmas, because they have a lot of sales during that time of the year. And also, I would add, don't run untested code. Although this isn't really a best practice, it's really just common sense. Nightmare number two, SAPO code bits. A bit of context, code bits was a conference for 1,000 attendees. Registration was free, but you had to apply and the applications were reviewed. It started as a way of making sure that only developers would get in. We weren't putting together a conference for managers, recruiters, marketeers. It was just hard technical people. With time, we started getting over 1,000 applications of hardcore developers, and so we had to turn down a lot of people, talented people. The conference ran for 3 days, 24 hours a day, so this is a non-stop event. And at the core of the event, there's a 48-hour competition. So you hack on your project for 48 hours, and by the end of it, you have 90 seconds to present your project. And there's a jury, but the users, the audience, also vote on the presentations. And this is a nightmare in three chapters. Chapter number one, the visitor. So the conference starts, everybody gets in, we have the keynote, the opening speech, and I go to the back office, and this is an oversimplification of the back office, to see who's already in the building. I see, for instance, that I'm there, I've been approved, I checked in. Celso, one of the other organizers, he's been approved. He hasn't checked in, even though he's been in the building for about a week now. And then I find something, which is someone who has not been approved, but still managed to check in. I'm going to explain this. Somebody who was declined participation in the event, he actually took the time to walk to the venue. He gathered the courage to stand in line. He walked up to the reception counter and said, "Hi, my name is so-and-so." Somebody searched his name showed up. There's a badge saying this person cannot enter, but the person didn't realize that. He hit the button, check in, and it worked. So the guy walks in, and then he enters complete radio silence on every single social network. There's no tweets from the guy anymore, there's no posts on Facebook, there's nothing on his blog, nothing. So he's going to make the most of the event, not letting anyone realize that he's in. So this is a problem for us on several levels. Let's put aside the moral debate of whether he deserved to be there or not, because this is really clever. But this could turn into a public relations nightmare. I mean, there's so many people who weren't allowed in, friends of people who are in the building. And what happens if somebody realizes that they can do that? How many people are going to show up? So at this point, we have someone hacking on code furiously trying to solve it. Nightmare chapter number two, the anonymous tip. So you go to your profile on CodeBits, you have your name, your photo, there's your public bio, you also have a private pitch, and you go to the back office, or actually to your back office, you can edit this, and it's your public bio and your private pitch that decide whether you get in or not. So somebody sent us an email saying, "I know someone who's been approved to attend the event and is not going to be able to make it. But a friend of his wants to go, and he was declined." So what the first one is going to do is he's going to change his name, his photo, his email address, everything. He's going to transform himself into the other guy so the other guy can get in. Again, really clever. Now we know that someone is thinking about this. We really can't go to the guy and say, hey, you're a bad person, because he hasn't done anything yet. We just got a tip. So what we do instead is we write a blog post explaining this, explaining that we know about this, explaining that we actually receive notifications whenever somebody changes his name or their email address, and that we know we're onto you, so don't do this. And the guys didn't, but several others did. So now that we wrote a blog post about it, several people actually tried to break the system. Chapter number 3, voting. That's a bunch of people on stage presenting. This group right here, they're finishing their presentation. There's 4 seconds left to vote. So far they have 80 votes in favor, 49 against. When they're done, these guys are up. And this is the audience. They have to vote. It's just a thumbs up, thumbs down. Here's the problem. At 90 projects, 90 seconds each, that's over 2 hours of presentations. It is too long. If we use 10 more seconds for voting, that's 2.5 hours. Every 10 seconds per project, that implies 15 minutes more on the presentations. And it is a long time. We can't afford that. So what happens? On the very first day, we realized that when people try to vote, the website crashes. Why? Because it's been tested, but only with one person voting at any time. So the problems we had an unauthorized entry, a potential public relations nightmare. We had security flaws, and the website down. Why? There were no unit tests. There wasn't any kind of test whatsoever. The specification, if it happened to exist, because it didn't, it wouldn't have accounted for security issues. And again, with the testing, no stress testing. How to fix this? Well, easy. Testing, technical specification, and more testing. Nightmare number 3, switching services. And this is about a project that hasn't come out yet. It's not on the market yet. It's barely started with coding. This is a travel website. It's based on a specific content provider. So there's countries, there's cities, there's basically destinations. And there's photos. There's articles and all that, hotels, but there's also photos. And somebody said, hey, let's use a different service for the photos. Instead of our original content provider, let's use something else. Because I've seen the photos, and the photos from this other provider seem to be better. And no one bats an eye, and everything's merry. Unfortunately, when coding started, they realized that the original service was based on location IDs. So if you want pictures of Portugal, you go to the location ID of Portugal. The new service, it uses GPS coordinates. Not only that, also a location radius. And this can be a problem. First of all, what are the coordinates of a country? There's 2 schools of thought. One of them is based on centroids, so it's basically the center of the country. The other one is based on capitals, so in this case, Portugal, Lisbon. The 2 schools of thought have something in common with regards to this scenario, which is that they both suck. Because if we're looking at centroids, that's the center of Portugal. Now, what kind of radius are we going to use? We need to have a big enough radius that will give us something useful. But if you look at it closely, before you get to Lisbon or Oporto, you get to Spain. So that could be a problem. So what if you use a small radius? Well, that gives you the center of Portugal, which happens to be this. Not really something that you want on a travel website. So what if you look for the coordinates of the capital? A lot of services give you this. So the coordinates of Portugal are usually this, which translate to Rua da Junqueira. Well, at least it's in Lisbon. So I went, and I went to see what Street View would suggest, and he shows me this. That's okay, because this isn't really the photo that would come from the other service. But it gives me an idea of what I could expect, so it would be somewhere in this vicinity. The problem is that on the other side of the street, this is what we find. So we can easily find pictures taken by users of not necessarily monuments. And with this in mind, I went to see some other capitals. I found out that in the center of Spain, they sell electronic equipment. I found out that the center of Brazil is kind of resemblant of the center of Finland with different houses. What I wasn't expecting is to find at the very center of Japan a damn elevator. And I figured, why and where does it lead? And then I realized that's not an elevator at all, because that's a door handle over there. And that says staff only, and that says emergency exit. So at the very center of Japan, we have an emergency exit. I couldn't make this up if I wanted. So the problems here were basically a wrong estimation of time, because the project hadn't started yet, and there were so many issues to account for, so many technical issues to solve that no one had thought of. So we haven't started coding, but we know we're not going to meet the deadline. What causes this? I would say changes in specification, but it's not really the changes, it's the fact that you change the specification without accounting for what it implies. So best practice would be to either commit to the specification or to always allot some time to revise the timings. Nightmare number four, in two chapters. Chapter number one, the laptop. So we have a payments platform again. This was years before, and the developer went on vacation. And for a while, everything worked, until this happened. Somebody closed his laptop. And the system stopped working, and nobody knew why. And unfortunately, this developer didn't believe in phones, so there was no way of reaching him. And since there was no way of reaching him, there was no way of knowing that on the laptop there was something running. It was an SSH tunnel connecting two production servers, and when they closed the laptop, they stopped communicating with each other, so there was no more payments. Now, fast forward a few years, same company. The scenario this time is a newsletters platform. And there's a new product. This is going to be a newsletter with 250,000 subscribers, and it has to be delivered in less than an hour. But the current platform is not fast enough for that. And this is when the famous last words were uttered by someone, which were, temporary solution. We'll just call the temporary solution something that will send these emails, but outside the platform, and we'll fix the platform, and everything will be great again. The newsletter goes live, and then the developer goes on vacation. And then there's no newsletter. Now, the previous developer, he didn't believe in phones. At this point, the company doesn't believe in laptops, because you can't close down a workstation. Unfortunately, he's still on vacation, the newsletter isn't working, no one knows why. We go to the machine. We look at the processes and we realize there's a screen session there. So we kind of have an hint that he's probably running things. He hasn't deployed the code. He has the code in his home directory and he's running it from there. Fortunately, we were able to see his bash history, so we know which commands he's been running. And from that, we get to a database. And on the database, we find several registries, several entries, and we try to figure out what's going on. There's a status, there's a letter D. This was the day before, so maybe this is done, maybe this worked. And then these are probably the next things to take care of. We know there are three segments, so what the hell is this? We try deleting that line, and suddenly everything works again. Why? Because there's a form where somebody types in the name of the segment, and someone was too quick to press enter. why wasn't this a combo box or something else to select the segment? Because somebody said temporary solution. And if it's a temporary solution, you're trying to save time, then you really don't care about what you're doing. So the problems here, in one case, payment stopped. In the other one, the newsletter wasn't sent. What caused this? An absolute absence of deployment methodologies. Each one just improvised. And there was no documentation, of course. If there was some documentation, maybe somebody would have been able to solve the problem rapidly. Best practices to keep in mind here, documentation, and some kind of deployment methodologies. Nightmare number five, and I know we've all been there, legacy code. A few years ago, I was thrown into a new system. This was a platform that would parse several different formats, stuff like RSS, Atom, etc. And it would export just one format, but it was kind of a multiplexer. So data comes from different sources. It goes out to different targets. The system has been in place for a few years. The current maintainer is about to go crazy and is about to leave. So what's the situation? I get into the code, and you know when you find those lines that are over 80 characters long? This wasn't the case. These were really, really long lines. Throughout the project, there was SQL being concatenated with variables read from the URL. The code was duplicated, which meant that the bugs were also duplicated. And from time to time, someone would find a bug, and the person would fix the bug, but not necessarily in all places. And when they would fix the bug in the other place, the fix wouldn't necessarily be the same. So maybe they were introducing new different bugs. And aside from all that, the whole thing was running on crontab. Every 5 minutes, the process started. And unfortunately, it took a little bit longer than 5 minutes to run. The load on the machine was incredible. So each process would render the previous one a bit longer. And at some point, when the machine had about 60 processes running at the same time, the developer, the maintainer that was about to leave, had to try to get into the machine and somehow stop those processes. And getting into the machine was the difficult part. The problems here, unreadable code, unmaintainable code. There was no way that we could extend that platform. And not only the code was unmaintainable, the maintainer was unmaintainable because he was about to leave and nobody else knew about the damn thing. What caused this? A lot of stuff. No specification, no code review, nothing. There was nothing. This is the kind of slide that practically writes itself because it just changes from no to yes. Now, if we look at a list of best practices, it's just so much. There's so much to be done. And sometimes we look at it, and if it's a project that is going to take us, say, a week, why am I going to take an additional week with the best practices? I've seen projects that took less than a week to come to life, and then we spend way more than a week to fix them. Sorry. You know what? I'm almost done. So the best practices to keep in mind, in my humble opinion, would be some kind of technical specification. And I do include here listing and testing the APIs. Also the coding standards, of course. Code review. And I'm mentioning both peer review and automated code review. I'm not sure I mentioned, but I work at Codacy. It's an automated code review platform. It's not like I'm trying to pass any kind of subliminal image here, but it's this is the kind of thing, I'll do it again. This is the kind of thing that it will not take you any time at all. You just set it up once, it's there for you. You do a commit, because obviously you're using some kind of deployment methodology that includes versioning, so there's probably a Git repository somewhere. So the system can read your comments and it can send you an email automatically saying, hey, you're about to introduce this bug. Testing, all kinds of testing. If you can't do something like stress testing, ask somebody else to do it for you. and also technical documentation, which is something that you should write and you should also read. I'll get back to that. Those are the five nightmares that I wanted to tell you about, but also, as a kind of like fun facts about documentation, two situations that I've encountered. One of them was a developer looking for someone from another project because he needed some information, and he was bothering the person so much, and at some point the other person said, "Did you bother looking into the documentation?" And the guy said, "Oh, there's documentation. Sorry." And he went back to it. And this happened because in this company, it was really, really rare to have some kind of documentation. So when somebody wrote it, no one knew where to look for it. That guy over there is laughing because he used to work at that company. And this one as well. Someone bothering someone with questions. This was actually me. So the legacy system, I wrote a new one, a new system. Then 7 years passed, and I went to the current maintainer, and I asked it, "It does support this, right? I can't remember implementing it." He says, "I have no idea." "What do you mean? Don't you know it? Isn't it in the documentation?" So 7 years later, the guy says, "What documentation?" 7 years later, the guy had no clue that there was documentation on the project. Thorough documentation. I would imagine, this does conclude my presentation. As it turns out, I wasn't going to run over the 40 minutes. I would imagine that most of us have been here in these situations, or maybe some of our code is going to be present in some of these situations. I recall that the person I was over 10 years ago when I started is a very different person from the one I am today. I also recall that back then, when I would see something like this, I would always assume it was the developer's fault. And to be quite honest, I am sorry to admit it, but I would think this person was stupid. This person had no clue what they were doing. That's not always the case. It's not that the person is stupid. It's just that best practices weren't in place. No one before that person took the time to say, "We're going to do this properly." And it should happen. Somebody should step in and say, "We have to do this the way it should be done." And that concludes it. Thank you very much.